This is A Drink with a Friend. I'm Tish Oxenreiter.
And I'm Seth Haynes.
All right, Seth, what are you drinking for lunchtime?
Well, today it is lunchtime. And so typically I would start to wane from caffeine, but I am so tired lately. Mm-hmm. And this is maybe a little bit too much information, but I had a muscle twitch all night last night. It kept me up until like 3 a.m.
Oh, man.
And so I'm drinking coffee, but it is surely for the caffeine. It is not good coffee. It's just office swill.
Yeah. Office coffee.
It's the worst. I don't know what to do about it though. So anyway, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking my apple cider vinegar, weird, hippie cocktail. So as a reminder, it's like 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, a pinch of Himalayan salt, a squeeze of lime, and sparkling water. And it's weird, but I've grown to really love it. And I drink it about once a day now. I keep alluding to this, and I'm sure we'll eventually talk about it, but I'm doing this weird intermittent fasting kind of eating routine. And I do this on the days that I don't eat much because it's good for electrolytes. So yeah.
We should find a co-packer for this and bottle it and just see if we can sense. We'll sell it as the Tish mocktail. I don't know. What can we call it? The oxen tail.
Oxen mocktail. Yeah. The thing is, I've had a bottled version of it. Like the brand Bragg's sells some version of this and it's not as good. I like mine better. So I might be onto something here.
I mean, let's do it. Let's do it. And then they can sponsor the show.
That's right. Then we can self-sponsor.
It's all circular.
Okay. Well, so today's topic that we want to unpack is this idea of rituals. And I mean it slightly different than routines. With the end of spring in mind, for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, we've got a lot of graduations. We've got the end of the school year in general and the start of summer. Weddings tend to happen a lot in early summer. So we've got a lot of these rituals and they've been on my mind because we're doing more rituals, my family personally, that we missed out on a year ago because of COVID. And so I'm just thinking about them and I don't know, contemplating why they matter, why we as humans do them. So before I kind of share my thoughts, I want to know your thoughts. Do you have any rituals this time of year that you like either love or begrudgingly attend?
I mean, not really. We have kids that are ages from 9 to 16. And so somebody's always graduating from something, which I always think is funny when you have like a kindergarten graduation.
Oh, I know.
Or like a junior high graduation. But because of the spread, somebody is always graduating from something. And so there is that sort of turning over the leaf. My kids go to a school where at the end of every year they have sort of an awards ceremony, but at that awards ceremony they also give them their quote tribal names. And it's more than anything, it's just kind of a blessing, like a way of saying, like, here's what we saw in you this year, and so here's what your name is. And for instance, this year they already had the ceremony for the seniors, and I went. And the tribal names were organized around Bob Marley songs. So it's not, it's kind of a fun, you know, it can be anything. It can be, you know, animals, European continents. I mean, whatever, it can be anything. Mm-hmm. But it's always really fun. And it's sort of like a ritualistic send off from one grade to another. Like, here are the things that you achieved and here are the things that mark this year for you. And now, since this year is over and it's been marked by your name, now go forward into your new name. So that's kind of interesting. It's something that my kids do more than I do, but I always look forward to it every year.
Yeah. Yeah. Rituals are kind of weird, but I find it more fascinating how important they are in the span of human history. Like, we have been ritualistic since, you know, written history. I was digging a little into what they are exactly, kind of to prep for our chat here. You know, what is the difference between rituals and routines? Because routines are like, I go to the grocery store on Mondays. But clearly something like graduating from high school is more important. Well, not so much the graduating, but the ceremony itself clearly that's more stand apart than me going to the same grocery store at this roughly the same time a week every year. So I was kind of trying to unpack what is the difference then and why do they matter? And the thing I've kind of come down to is this idea that routines are things we do to use our time well. So in a way they're more, I mean, they might have some sort of, inner benefit of like keeping our stress low, but for the most time they are for practical reasons. They use our time well. Versus rituals are things we do rhythmically to tie our actions to our beliefs. And so what we do outwardly or what we do in action, the way we participate in a thing, is directly because of something we believe to be true. And so I think this is a really interesting thought, about our lives in general, but I think we could even get more specific about our, I don't know what you want to call it, like our spiritual lives. With you and I having been raised in a non-liturgical or liturgical environment to being where we are now, and that those things matter. So that to me is what's really interesting about rituals. Like our bodies clearly matter and we believe them, even if we kind of roll our eyes at things like kindergarten graduation, because I do too, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that's been really powerful for me over the last year is just being constantly engaged in rituals, even when I don't feel it, you know, even when I'm not feeling like standing, sitting, kneeling, going through that whole full body gyration every Sunday of rituals. Somehow that is super grounding to me, you know, especially you get in this like sort of frenetic pace, this world that's just insanely fast. And in that insane fastness, you know, every week I have a ritual that stops me at least for an hour, depending on who's preaching, because sometimes it's only like 45 minutes if, if it's a quick sermon, a quick homily. Right. But otherwise, normally for an hour, you know, I'm stopped, I'm slow, and I'm pulled into sort of this ritualized context. And it does something for me. It does ground me. And I do, yeah, maybe it's putting my body in the way of belief. Maybe that's it. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just stopping the crazy and stopping me. That's so important. I haven't really thought that through.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the additional point that matters is the idea of rhythmically, meaning we are ridiculous humans who need this more than once a year or just every now and then when we feel like it. We need it every week, or we need it really regularly, because we are prone to forgetting what matters to us. We're prone to leaving whatever ritual we're talking about and moving on to something else. And then it just kind of gets shoved off to the side. And so this need for a rhythm in our lives, I think, really speaks to the heart of what we're getting at. And thinking about last year, 2020, how COVID and quarantine put so much of that on hold that, you know, we've already talked about the good side of it, like the, you know, not having to be everywhere, but we missed out on things like going to church regularly in person. Kids didn't get to go to prom or whatever it is. And we saw the loss of that, like globally. I thought that was really interesting.
And kindergarten graduations. Did anyone go to a kindergarten graduation? Highly doubtful. In fact, we had our senior high graduation last year was all virtual. And I remember watching it, and they actually, they filmed part of it from a drone or something, or maybe it was live streamed part of it from a drone. Like, so after the closed ceremony, they all went out to this parking lot at the mall here in Fayetteville. And they got on these flatbed trucks. So they were all like this, these students were elevated on separate flatbed trucks. And then you could drive by in your car as a family unit and like yell at the window, like, congratulations. And if you couldn't go, then they had this like little drone that flew over the parking lot and took footage and sort of streamed it back, which was kind of fascinating and interesting. But yeah, like the whole context, the whole context of graduation changed, the whole ritual changed, the whole, like the things that you do just because that's what you do, changed. And we had to all stop and think like, what does this even mean? I remember too, speaking of the pandemic, last year we were supposed to enter the Catholic Church on Easter at the Easter Vigil. And I remember just watching that and thinking like, this was supposed to be my ritual. Like this was supposed to be the way that my family entered into this beautiful, like extended ritual. And when we finally did make our way into the church, it was through a very quiet service. I think maybe 100 people were there. Mm-hmm. And it was just a very different, almost anticlimactic sort of entrance that felt like a real relief. But by the same token, there was something about that ritualized experience that sort of, you know, we all kind of stopped and thought, oh, man, we feel like we missed something because we didn't have the ritual. And so maybe that's another way to look at it, is to say, what are the rituals that we attend because they're, you know, spiritual in nature, they're physical in nature. So like working out would be a physical ritual for me. And maybe communal rituals too, like when we're talking about the kindergarten graduation. I think we need to title this episode "The Ritual of the Kindergarten Graduation,"
because it keeps coming up.
It keeps coming up. But again, like, why do you attend the wedding? You know, why do you attend the kindergarten? You know, graduation. Why do you attend these sort of, you know, nonprofit dinners or whatever in the pre-COVID age? You know, there was a communal piece. You believe the community is important and is a big, you know, a big thing. And so if you believe that, then you embody it by then going into these sort of rituals.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually love that you said that, because I actually jotted down before we talked the three reasons we have rituals. And the first one was they form a common identity. So I think that speaks to your kids' school and their tribal names. You know, it helps you sense a belonging to a group that shares that ritual. An example in my kid's life, and I guess in mine as a teacher, is we end our school year with something called a cardboard boat regatta. So the last 2 weeks of school, kids are put into teams and they have to build a boat using nothing but cardboard and duct tape.
Oh boy.
It's very fun. And we have heats and a tournament and a last boat standing, kind of the whole bit. And it's very funny to watch, because some kids, you know, you're watching as an adult the engineering process and you know, like, that is not going to last long. But it's a really cool experience because they get to learn about physics and the whole thing. But we didn't get to do that last year. I will be honest, as a parent, my initial response was, woohoo, one less thing to do.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my kids feels that way, but the other two were genuinely disappointed. And I thought, wow, this thing matters to you. That is interesting to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of them, it was mostly because this is so much fun. The other one was because, like, that was how she marked the end of the school year. And so I was going to say the second reason we have rituals is to both create and mark time. You know, we create a sense of time. You know, if you think about it, late May is really kind of an arbitrary time to end a school year. It's antiquated back from the days when most of us were farmers. But we still do that. And we like having some kind of end of the school year cutoff thing to remind us this is what we're doing. And then they mark time by way of like the liturgical calendar and birthdays and, you know, holidays. But then the third reason, and this is, I think, what you're getting at with perhaps the CrossFit, is this idea of, like, they serve as Ebenezers to us.
Yeah.
Like, they serve as reminders of what we care about. And so for me, you know, I'm thinking of my walking. I'm on day 32 now of walking 5 to 6 miles a day.
Yeah.
And I do it in the morning, because, or at least I get half of it done in the morning, because I want to start off my day that way. And on that walk, I remind myself, this is what matters to me. I care about this, the being outside, the having time to think and be alone and having time to move my body, all those things. I need that reminder, even though, like, I can spend the rest of my day going about saying, like, oh yeah, that kind of thing matters to me. But I'm reminding myself physically, this matters to me when I'm doing it.
Yeah. I mean, without the ritualized practice, it's just words, right?
Right. Right.
We can say whatever we want to say, but if you don't put your body in the way of something, in the way of, or in the motion of something, of doing something, then it's just words. And one of the things that I find so freeing to me about, for instance, saying the creed every week, is that there are some Sundays when I'm just saying it. You know, it's just the words. It, like, I don't, I'm not feeling it. I believe it, but it's not there for me. But then there are other weeks when it's deeply impactful and meaningful. And the weeks when it has been the most impactful and meaningful are typically the weeks that they kind of sneak up on me, right? Like I just go because it's the ritual. It's the thing that I do on Sunday. And then I find myself near tears saying the creed out of nowhere. And again, I put my body in the way of doing something that I believe. And as a result, that belief gets a chance to really root into me and to really do the work that it's meant to do. And there's something really beautiful about that. I mean, there are times when I don't feel like going to the gym and I go and all of a sudden I find myself really full of energy and really full of life and really invigorated. There are times I don't feel like going to a graduation ceremony or a tribal naming ceremony. And every time without fail, I end up crying. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, oh, they're moving on. It's such a sweet part of life. And, you know, I think there's a real gift in putting ourselves in the motion, in the way of rituals. And the gift is that when we do that, sometimes the belief can sort of sneak up on us and surprise us and remind us like how much we actually believe the thing that we're participating in.
It's so true. You know, I love that you brought up the Nicene Creed because that was one of my first draws to going to a more liturgical church when we became Anglican, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, because we were in this season of deconstructing or whatever the term is these days. And you know, I just wasn't sure what I believed anymore, but I loved that I could say that every week because it was a reminder to my brain that I'm not sure what I believe about a lot of things, but I at least think I can agree with these things.
Yeah.
And there was something also comforting about the common identity that people have been saying this for what, 1700 years or whatever it is. And so it made me feel tied to people who are smarter than me. You know, that like, gosh, I don't know what I think, but I think there is some wisdom in the idea of something really, really old still being true. I don't know. And so I think that's a huge appeal to something like the liturgy is tying you back to the past and helping you feel less alone in what you think. And, you know, this keeps going where I don't mean it to go, but we have both said before that one of the appeals to are having become Catholic is this idea of not having to have to think about what it is you believe. I mean, that can sound really weird. We don't mean you don't use your brain, but we mean like we submit to the idea that perhaps there are those that are wiser than us. And I think these rituals help us remember that, at least when we're, you know, when it comes to the idea spiritually, but I could see that too in all sorts of ways, you know, when it comes to health, you know, like I am doing this thing, even if I don't feel like it, because doctors and scientists have given us ample proof that it is good that we get enough sleep or whatever it is, you know, submitting to truths, even though we don't feel like it is healthy for us.
Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't do the research and that you don't shut your, you know, that you do shut your brain off. It doesn't mean that you, you know, don't have questions. And it doesn't mean that you don't even question things that are within that certain discipline or that certain ritual, you know.
Right.
Again, for sure. To make an analogy, there are times when I walk in and they're like, hey, today we're going to be doing, you know, kipping pull-ups. And I'm like, we are? Are we really going to do that? Am I going to be? Can I really do that? I don't know if I believe in that. In the same way, I mean, there are still things, you know, that I struggle with within, my particular faith structure. And I'm sure you do too. And, you know, that doesn't mean that I don't wrestle with those things, that I don't from time to time disagree with those things, that I don't from time to time want to push back and maybe even pitch a little bit of a fit. But what it does mean is that the important things that are embodied within the ritual, right? So like the prayers of the people, the passing of the peace, the recitation of the creed, the consecration, like these big moments in these, you know, smaller rituals within the bigger movement of the ritual, like these are super important to me and they're super true to me. And so you can pick a number of issues with which I might disagree vehemently today. I may not tomorrow, but I may today. And it doesn't mean I shut my brain off and don't think about those things. But what it does mean is that I don't have to rethink or recreate an entire church service or mass with meaning because the ritual already gives us that meaning. It already provides it. There was this one moment, and I, not to be barren apologists here on the show, but there was this moment that made a whole lot of sense to me early on when I was listening to Bishop Barron, and he said, this was years ago, and he said something to the effect of, you may not agree with everything that the church teaches down to the letter of the law. Like you may question it. You may struggle with it. You may wrestle with it. And that's okay. And that doesn't also mean that maybe this isn't your home. Just mm-hmm. because you wrestle with it and question with it and have problems with some of it doesn't mean that maybe this is where you're supposed to be. But by the same token, like, if you believe and assent to the big rocks, the big pillars, the big, you know, as we're saying on this show, rituals, then enter into those rituals and see what happens. And that's exactly what I can say has happened in my life, really, since I was probably in fourth grade, is that every time I entered into the ritual, it was like, oh, this is important and meaningful and impactful. And it really is who I am. And so all the other like sub issues aside, all the other political issues aside, and there are plenty of them in every church, in every faith. I don't even go broader than church, go faith in general.
Yeah.
In every sect, in every religion, there are these, you know, particularly now, great big political divides, great big political issues. You're not real if you don't believe this. You're not real if you don't believe that. Well, screw you or screw you, rah, you know, whatever. still, those issues aside, when I enter into the rituals, and when I really allow them to affect me, something happens. And it doesn't just happen like in this like metaphorical sense. Like it actually happens in my body.
Yep.
It's wicked important to me.
It is. It's wild how much we need the sacramentality of these things in our lives. You know, that we need our bodies to recognize the truth, beauty, and goodness around us. Because we're fickle and because we're so finite and because just flat out God made us that way. You know, if he wanted us to be ethereal spirits, he would have, but we are walking around in human suits and so they must mean something, you know? And to keep this even more informal, you know, to tie that back to things like end of school years or starts of summers, I personally have never been terribly sentimental. And so sometimes things like the kindergarten graduations, I can roll my eyes out a little bit. I mean, down to just the even like, we always do this, you know, if I have a kid that'll say that whenever we've done something twice and we kind of laugh like, we do. Oh, this is a thing our family does. Okay. If I can unpack the, okay, what do I really believe? Then it helps me stay a little more grounded and be okay with some of these things that I otherwise would kind of side eye. You know, thinking about like what we do in the summer or, you know, and I'm not even talking about the rituals that seem like rituals on paper. I'm talking about things like, you know, floating the river, how our kids seem to really want to do this every summer, whereas Kyle and I could just take it or leave it, or we don't feel the need to do it every summer. But to them, it's not summer unless we do that. Or there was, when they were younger, we gave pajamas the first night of Advent, I think 2 years in a row. And so by the third year, Tate was like, we're getting pajamas, right? Yeah. And so now it's a thing we do and they're much older and we just do it to be silly, really, but it matters to them. And this becomes a shaping of our identity as a family. And so I think these are the things that matter. These really small rituals, whether they're like, you know, pancakes on Saturday morning or an evening walk or story time or a thing you say when you tell your kid goodnight or whatever it is, date nights, these are all rituals and they really matter a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think to your point, they matter because they remind us who we are. They remind us what we believe and they make us put our bodies in the way of those beliefs. And that's huge.
Yeah, it is huge.
So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. If a listener is listening to this and they say, well, I don't really know how to identify the rituals in my life, or I don't even, you know what rituals I want in my life. Or maybe they say, man, from a religious perspective, like, I don't really have any rituals and that's like sort of feels like something's missing. What would you recommend the average listener do?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought about this because you might actually really want them, or you might just wonder if you even have them to begin with. And I think it's important that we all have at least a few things we can hang our hats on, you know, like little pegs in our week. And I think here's three things that come to mind is finding something that's really doable, first of all. So that has to consider your stage of life, for example. You know, like if you've got little bitty kids, you probably can't go on a date night every week, but maybe you can go on one once a month. And so, but you put that on the calendar and that's like a, we do not move this come hell or high water. We go on a date once a month. And then maybe in 10 years, you get to go on a date once a week. That sounds really fatalistic. I don't mean it sound that, I mean, we're now at the stage where we can leave our kids at home, but
it feels true though. You know, it may be fatalistic, but it feels true.
It feels true. Right. And then I think the other thing is to keep them enjoyable. Now that doesn't mean you just write off anything that sounds hard, you know, like CrossFit, like what you said. If you only did things you thought were fun, whenever they say, okay, we're doing pull-ups, you'd say, no, thanks, you know, and do something else. But I think when you are, I don't know, just dipping your toe into this idea, think of something that you actually want to do.
Yeah.
So maybe it's pancakes on Saturday morning, you know, really simple stuff. And then I think the third thing is that idea of remembering the beliefs and actions thing. So actually think about what are the things you believe to be true and maybe write them out. Like, these are the five things that I think are most important to me. And maybe that's where the rule of life comes in, which we've talked about on the show, or maybe not. I don't know. Yeah. But you know, if you think about, okay, actually I care about what it is I believe and who God is in my life. And yet my outward actions don't act like it. So, okay, I'm going to write that down as like, I need a ritual in this category. And so perhaps that starts with something as simple as praying in a particular chair in a particular way for a week and seeing if that feels right to you. I don't know. I'm just kind of shooting from the hip there. Do you have any additional thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great one. So when I was, when I first quit drinking, and I actually wrote about this in my first book, Coming Clean. When I quit drinking, I had a chair that I sat in every evening. And I began by praying the old Orthodox, you know, prayer, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of the Living God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And I would pray that every night. I got this Anglican rosary, which is 7 beads instead of 10. And I think it's 3 decades instead of, I don't remember. It's either like, I can't remember. Anyway, it's not even decades. They call it weeks. I think it's 4 weeks. So 4 weeks of 7. Anyway, super confusing. Long story short, there are beads involved, and I would pray through these beads in the evenings because that was the moment, that was the time when I would typically have a drink. And so I would sit down and I would pray through these beads over and over again and just kind of listen. And that was the thing that sort of pulled me out of this spiral of anxiety in the evenings when I wasn't drinking. And so, yeah, I mean, for me, my entry into even rote prayers was a very ritualistic attempt to beat back addiction and temptation. I think one of the things that's important when you're looking is to say, like, first of all, what are the rituals that I need? You know, not just like, do I want a ritual because I want a ritual? What are the rituals that I need, and identify those things? And I think for me, what I found is the more that I you know, I moved into these rote prayers for purposes of, you know, connecting with God during addiction, what I found is like, I actually needed that rhythmic ritual in every area of my life more than just, you know, in the evenings. Like, I needed it once a week. I needed it to be a little bit more overt. At the time I was in this like, super great, still love the people, but, you know, non-denominational, happy clappy sort of church. And again, great people, great music, loved it, but there was no rhythm to it. It didn't provide me any rhythmic foundation for my life. And by praying these prayers over and over again, I realized, oh, actually, this is super grounding. I need this. So, hence the journey. So I think for a lot of us, what we need to do is start with saying, like, what are the rituals I need? If I'm not in good shape, my health is an issue. What are the rituals that I could enter into? Maybe it's just walking 3 miles a day at the same time every day. Maybe it's going to a class same day, you know, same time of every day, whatever it is. Like, what are the rituals that I can enter into to help, you know, sort of fix this need that I have? If you feel like you lack community, like, what are the rituals that you're skipping out on in your community that you need to help you feel more connected with the community? And I think if we approach it that way of like the rituals that we need because our bodies need them, then I think a lot of this can become a lot more intentional than just like, oh yeah, I do this ritual because it's what I do. And I think the intentionality is really the key. It's the spirit of the law more than the letter of the law, so to speak.
And if I could like press that button even more, I would argue, like, if there's something that comes to your mind as you hear Seth and I talk and your gut reaction is a little bit like, oh, I don't want that, then maybe listen to it. Maybe there's something to our knee-jerk disdain for an idea, be it the idea of praying a written prayer or walking a mile every day or whatever it is. Like, you know, it doesn't mean to be an Eeyore about everything and look at the worst part and see, you know, how can I like lash myself. But I don't know, listen to your inclination to run away from something and maybe do the opposite, you know, run a little bit towards it, lean into it a little bit.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And then I think the final thing I would just add is it's kind of important, I think, that we keep, if rituals by definition of what they are supposed to be kind of special, then I think it's important not to have too many and not to make everything a special ritual, you know? And I know I keep talking about the Saturday pancakes, but that's the one that comes to mind in my family because we went through a season when we would have pancakes or waffles or something like that once every weekend. And it was just out of convenience or just because of what we did. And after a while, Kyle and I just started realizing like, we don't actually feel the need for this all the time. And a kid would kind of ask, what's for breakfast? And we discovered like, gosh, this is taking up hours of our morning. And we just sort of pushed that aside saying like, this is just something we're going to do every now and then. This isn't like a weekend thing. And so to consider, you know, just to keep them few and far between so that they stay special and to keep it really open-handed. Like if you're the type of person that's super into these traditions to recognize that maybe your family isn't as much or, you know, doesn't need everything to be very special. and by doing so, you're keeping those gems, you know, nice and shiny and standing outy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And that's important to remember, too, because in some families, there are different needs for different rituals. For instance, my kids have the need for a pancake ritual and I desperately want a waffle ritual. So I just call all breakfast rituals off.
Yeah. Any kind of heavy battered breakfast in general, though, I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting older, but I can only do them every now and then.
Well, that's proof that you're probably not headed for sainthood, but whatever.
I know. Okay. Well, with that in mind, this is the part when we are talking about something we are reading, watching, or listening to that is adding more beauty to our life. So Seth, what do you have right now?
So I am still reading Infinite Country, the Patricia Engel book that I talked about, which is only better than it was the last time we talked about it. It's just it's better. But I've also been just sort of reading bits and pieces of poetry here and there. And a poem has come to mind over and over again by William Stafford, and it's called Assurance. And I actually read it at a memorial service a couple weeks ago, and I want to read it.
Please do.
Assurance. You will never be alone. You hear so deep a sound when autumn comes. Yellow pools across the hills and thrums, or the silence after lightning before it says its names, and then the clouds' wide-mouthed apologies. You were aimed from birth. You will never be alone. Rain will come, a gutter filled, an Amazon, long aisles. You never heard so deep a sound, moss on rocks in years. You turn your head. That's what the silence meant. You're not alone. The whole wide world pours down. That, like that poem has brought a lot of truth, beauty, and goodness to my life. I had a friend who died of despair a while back, and at his memorial service, that's the poem I read. And I just reminded people, like, you are not alone. You may feel alone, but you are not alone. And that reminder has been really important to me over the last few weeks, really.
And there's a line in it that stood out to me, something about the aim. What was that? Something about an aim that I liked.
You were aimed from birth.
Aimed from birth. I like that.
You were aimed from birth. We all have a purpose. We're all here for a reason. We've been put on a trajectory and aimed from birth. And that aiming means that someone has aimed us, right? Someone bigger than us has aimed us. And that very fact sort of highlights the fact that we are not alone. We didn't set ourselves on this trajectory. So Tish, what are you listening to, reading, watching, or engaging bringing you a little bit more truth, beauty, or goodness?
Well, I guess I'm going to put this in the category of I hope it will by tomorrow, because my son took the book that I pre-ordered because he's just as excited to read it as I am. So this week, John Green's new nonfiction book, The Anthropocene Reviewed, came out.
Okay.
We pre-ordered it because I'm a big John Green fan and our kids like him too because we listen to his podcast together. He has a standalone podcast called The Anthropocene Reviewed, which is the mother of this book that he just wrote. It's his first nonfiction book. And it's basically a collection of essays where he is reviewing different things within our, within the earth. I mean, that sounds so vague, but the Anthropocene is the time period we're in right now. Like, you know, we've got the Pleistocene and we've got the Jurassic era.
Yeah.
The Anthropocene is what we're in now. So he uses the 1-5 star system to review different things on Earth. And so it's everything from, I don't know, the idea of British soccer to what was one? Oh, book signatures, because he signed 250,000 copies of this. So he added that to the game Monopoly, all these things. And he's just got such a great perspective. I just like how he uses words and he's funny. And I also like kind of, maybe this is a form of ritual, I don't know, a shared experience with my kids, because we listen to his podcast with his brother, Dear Hank and John, on the way to school on Tuesday mornings. And so I'm looking forward to sharing this with my son, who's loving the book already. And we can talk about it together. So I'm excited about this book. And I like his podcast as well, The Anthropocene Reviewed. So there you go.
How do you think that he would rate, on a scale of 1 to 5, A Drink with a Friend?
He would overthink it because he's a big overthinker. And then maybe he would give it like 3.5 stars. He has a weird relationship with faith, because of his background. And so because he might think we get a little too spiritual, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think he would like us.
Maybe because he's human. Maybe he has a weird background with faith because he's human.
He's a normal guy. And he just seems like a great guy. And he's very nerdy, and I'm a big fan of nerds. I like overthinking for the most part. So, yeah, I think people, if you like this podcast, you would like his and you'd like his book. All right, it's time to wrap this up. You can find this episode as well as all episodes at adrinkwithafriend.com. And it is where you can also support the show for just a few bucks. If you like what we're bringing to your earbuds, we're almost 100% listener supported. So you can be one of those. Again, it's at adrinkwithafriend.com and in the show notes of this episode. You can find me and all my work at tishoxenrider.com. Seth has lost connection in the last 2 minutes of this recording, but he says that you can find him at sethhaines.com. Music for the show is by Kevin McLeod. Editing is by Kyle Oxenrider. And Caroline Tissell is our transcriber and assistant extraordinaire. I'm Tish Oxenrider, and Seth and I will be back here with you soon.